Exit 31. It's the Battle of Cutler Hill, mainly between Orange Nation and Exit 31.
Well, Susan, I thank you.
With Rain Stradamus and Nostra Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
It's a fun way to start things, impersonations of Pauly Scabilia, if you're not aware of what the Mickey Mouse laugh is all about.
It's a fun way to start things.
It's fun. What's, for some reason, as you can see, I haven't touched anything yet. No, I'm already muted, so that's not me. I don't know what that's coming from.
Awkward.
It is muted. I am looking at it right there.
It's got to be glue guy.
No, I'm already muted, so that's not me.
That's wow.
That's
it's
crazy.
Clearly you.
We'll get rid of it again. Okay. Started on its own. Sometimes we enter the matrix. These technological devices take on a life of their own.
I do feel like we live in a simulation sometimes.
Have a conversation. You're getting ads on your phone. Pick the form of social media. You're getting them. You're getting them in your email.
Yep.
You're getting spam in there. Big Brother's always watching and listening. We gotta pick a topic. This could be the first QSportsTalk.com poll of the day. Let's pick something to talk about. Keep repeating it and see how many of us, due to this conversation over the next couple of hours here on Exit 31 on ESPN Radio, get ads.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah.
You're like a billboard for the New York Knicks today.
I am. I'm Knicks'd out. I'm ready.
Are they starting their season tonight or
is
something?
Is that what's happening?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What a coincidence.
That's happening. Wow, man. Is that Patrick Ewing?
It is Patrick Ewing.
The New York Knicks basketball. Wow, you are ready to go.
I am ready to go.
And here's the funny thing. I'm going to set you off with your killing me smalls about hockey. You're frustrated with something that you saw in the Rangers game the other day, and that's going to be your airing of the sports grievances. That's your killing me smalls.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not necessarily something I was frustrated with the game. It's just something in the game that made me realize my frustrations in another area. And so that's how I will tease that.
Shout out to the guys on Orange Nation. We'll get you to Brent Axon on the block. But in the meantime, we got a couple hours here broadcasting from the Gun Tire Studios. So Mario Sacco, because it's Sportscaster Wednesday, he's with News Channel 9, joins us in about 10, 15 minutes. We got a sound check today. We got a kerfuffle today. We got Mark Larson today. Those two are playing golf tomorrow. And anybody that listens on the regular realizes that's going to be part of the conversation today. I got a text. I won't even tell you which one sent it to me. You'll find out soon enough. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It's getting out of hand.
Mm.
I don't know any other way to put it. It's end of the year golf, and they take this seriously, man.
Oh, yeah.
No, Mark Larson really takes this seriously with Spectrum. He joins us at about 3:15. Then Jacob Payne's going to take a quick look back at Clemson, but we're really going to move and look forward to the Virginia Tech Hokies game, bringing that Big East rivalry back the last time we beat them a handful of years ago. Eric Dungy was here. Seems like all the good things happened when Eric Dungy was here.
Do you think?
Oh, but we'll get to all that. Let's go. Nostra Davidson versus Rain Stradamus. We've got our dog mentality set and ready to go. And the first thing I want to talk about is Chris Bunch. He had moved up the commitment. We mentioned it yesterday, but tomorrow at 5 o'clock, we find out if there's another addition to the class of 2022. Oh, and how about Buddy Boeheim? Did you see that he's probably going to win that Jerry West Award, best shooting guard in the country? Man, a lot of promise, a lot of expectations for him. He has worked on his handles. He's improved that part of his game. He has done, we've said this before, he's done that thing that the great ones do, that you get better at something every offseason.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because you gotta have the dog mentality. You gotta be willing to work, put in the work. And when you can get out of bed, walk downstairs in the offseason, and there's a basketball court at your house, you're able to do that. But you know what? You don't have to have that. You just have to find a gym, you gotta find a hoop somewhere and get to work. And that's what he's done. And so, yeah, I'm expecting big things from Buddy. Let me hear your opening thoughts on those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, with Buddy, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. He worked on his shooting early on. We saw the fruits of the labor there, especially last year with him just shooting absolutely lights out, especially in the NCAA tournament, working on the handles this year. You know, he's turned himself from a relative unknown in the college community other than the fact that he was Jim Boeheim's son. And he's changed the narrative for some people basically saying, this kid's only on a Division I team because his father's the coach, which I thought was incorrect back then. But he's changed the narrative from that to this guy has a legitimate shot at being an NBA prospect.
Yeah, I think he's in that conversation. Listen, man, they're expecting him to be one of the best players in the ACC, and so are we.
Yep.
And that's really what he's got to live up to now. And now having that name on the back of his jersey, there's a target, there's a bullseye, and with the praise comes the hate too. So he's got to be there every single game. He's got to be the best player on the court, arguably, for Syracuse. I don't think you can back off that statement. That's the expectation. He's in his fourth year now, right?
He's the leader.
Is this Buddy's team?
Yes. Yes, this
definitively.
Is Buddy's team. Definitively. Who else is it? Well, this was Buddy's team last year.
Yeah, you're right.
You love what Marek Dolezal brought to the table, but I mean, you couldn't say this was Dolezal's team.
Well,
I mean, Buddy was the ringleader.
You got into the postseason. You got into the tournament, and yeah, it was his team. He carried the team, didn't he?
Yeah.
So there you go. I just wanted to mention one little quick thing about Syracuse basketball before we move on. Malik Brown, you remember, as we are waiting for the Chris Bunch decision, that three-star committed a handful of days ago, and there's a reporter named Preston Willett that caught up with him in Charlottesville, Virginia, and talked to him about playing with Justin Taylor and, of course, for legendary coach Jim Boeheim. This is what Malik Brown said.
Me and Justin have been playing together since we were younger. Growing up together, we've been working out, playing on the same AU teams. It means a lot just knowing that I can trust him and he knows he can trust me, and we know each other's game and just keep developing each other. Coach Boeheim is a legend. It's been some really good conversations. One of the conversations was, I know a lot of people ask if he's going to be there, but I'm ready to go and just keep working and develop my game and be behind Coach Boeheim. Knowing that growing up I wanted to play in the ACC my whole life, just the talent that I know is going to be filled with the ACC, I'm ready.
Yeah, I figure if we're going to talk about Syracuse sports, it's a little bit more of a frustrating conversation to talk about football than basketball right now, right? We're excited for the season start right now. We're in the season with football, and we're like, oh boy, we lost three straight by 3 points. And we're going to have that conversation throughout the course of the afternoon. So there you go. We get started on a positive note. Exit 31, ESPN Radio, and QSportsTalk.com. The Yankees' worst nightmare is underway, but it got a little bit easier to digest last night, because as much as I don't want the cheating Astros to win and move on to the World Series, I definitely don't want the Red Sox. If I have to choose the American League team that loses to whoever comes out of the National League, well, then I'd rather have that be the Astros than Boston. What happened last night? What happened last night? That was crazy.
I checked the score.
Yeah.
I went onto the set. Did my sports segment. Right after that, we have a new weekend sports guy, so we had him then run through what I did at 11 just to get him some practice, get him used to running the prompter, get him used to everything. We get back to the desk, and it was 2-1 Red Sox in the seventh inning when I had gone to the set.
The last time there was a ninth inning like that, by the way, just for a historical reference, was the Marlins in 1997.
Wow.
Not something you see every day at this point in a baseball season. Go.
Yeah. So I forgot to preface it with the score was 2-1. In the seventh inning, when I go to the set, I come back to my desk and it's 9-2 in the ninth.
Yeah.
I was like, what just happened?
Laz Diaz. That's what happened. If you're a Yankees fan, you know, you love to see it. You troll the Red Sox fans. Jeff Abramo, who joins us from time to time, I was texting with him a little bit. He's like, I'm worried that that's a momentum shift right there, because it was between Schwaba, between Kike Hernandez. You're going, wait a minute, the Red Sox are going to crush them.
Yeah.
Whoa. And then it went off the rails last night. Laz Diaz, when he missed that call, and he missed that call. Mm-hmm. Nathan Eovaldi threw a strike. I'll give him that, if I'm being perfectly honest and not biased. But he missed. I mean, he was correct 84% of the time. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's terrible.
He was 16% of the time he's wrong.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's bad at any point in time, whether it's exhibition season or the regular season, but it's just unacceptable in the ALCS. Laz Diaz, man, I mean, he made the Yankees fans smile. I was like, all right, what happened there?
But he did it. I mean, he was poor on both sides of the ball. So you want to, I mean, if you're a Red Sox fan, you want to blame it on that?
He missed 11 strike calls for the Red Sox and 12 for the Astros, or vice versa. But the point
is, it was pretty even.
He screwed over both teams. Yeah. He was not very good, and he was terrible at calling balls and strikes last night in that ALCS game. And he was because of him, it directly affected the outcome of the game. I wouldn't be happy. And yet, if you're Cora or if you're Evaldi, you can't say anything because then you got to be like Marshawn Lynch once again, and I'm here so I don't get fined. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine how mad you have to be, and a few minutes later, you're sitting in a national press conference answering about this, and you can't really say what you want to say? Mm-hmm. I mean, Nathan Evaldi did to a point, but you got to be careful.
Right. I thought it was a strike, you know, but again, I'm in the moment. I'm trying to make my pitches. I'm attacking the zone. Came in the ninth inning. I gave up a double to Correa, and I tried to go to work there and try to get some outs and, you know, prevent him from scoring. I had two strikeouts, and then facing Castro, I felt like I was in control of the at-bat. Felt like I made a good pitch on the outside corner, and, you know, it didn't go my way, but I got to come back and, you know, I got to answer back and make another good pitch.
And unfortunately, well, we all know what happened. Now, is that a momentum shift in favor of Houston? Did that swing this series?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it did. Because you go from being potentially, you know, the Red Sox end up winning this game. And, I mean, they already had the momentum. And then it's just completely 100% momentum in the Red Sox favor. And then they're up 3-1 with one more game at Fenway. And that is a tall task.
Oof.
That is a tall task. And so now you have a situation where, regardless of what happens in Game 5, I mean, you're going back to Houston.
It's an unenviable position,
yeah,
to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely different. You go from, really, I'm convinced, you know, the Red Sox go up 3-1, there's no way they're losing the series, and now it's up in the air again.
That's baseball, Susan. Well, Susan, I thank you. Cody Bellinger hits 160 all year and now is a postseason hero for the Dodgers on the flip side, yeah, of this. Mm-hmm. You can't predict this stuff. That's why you play the game. It's Exit 31 ESPN Radio. We're at QSportsTalk.com. You're wearing Knicks gear. The Knicks season opener is tonight. So I will ask you, who is the key player on the Knicks roster? And they're going to be good this year. There's enough drama with the Nets, even, yep, though the situation still isn't as bad for Brooklyn as it is for Philadelphia.
Right, definitely not.
But who's the key player for the Knicks, you think, this year, the deciding factor, that one player who is on the roster or brought in that's the X factor? Tell me who you think it is.
Well, I mean, I think the obvious answer that you have to go with is Julius Randle. Can Julius Randle replicate the year that he had last year? I mean, he is the leader on this team in terms of, you know, the workload. So you would think that, but, you know, I'm not really sure if this is a trick question because...
Well, you were wrong all day yesterday, so maybe you're wrong again today.
Well, okay, so, you know, Julius Randle is the obvious choice.
Okay.
But if this is a trick question, you're trying to play some Jedi mind tricks with me.
I have receipts. Uh-huh. I have a couple of people that are going to back me up with some audio momentarily, okay, and they're experts. They're experts when it comes to NBA basketball.
I feel like maybe they're going with a guy like Derrick Rose or somebody, like a role player.
These guys are key for sure.
Yeah.
But you're still wrong.
I'm still wrong.
You want to know who? I'm going to give you legs.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm going to give you Doris Burke.
Okay.
Not Doris Burke's legs, Tim Legler and Doris Burke, DB. I've got back-to-back comments from those two about who this player is. They both chose this particular Knicks player as being a key to this season. And I will tell you this, it does have to do a little bit with health, of course.
I think now he's back into place, and I know Julius Randle took a big step forward next year, but they desperately need leadership as a primary ball handler. Kemba Walker is in New York. He's expressed, I'm thrilled to be there, and he's going to go back to that role that he had before. It's his show. You're first. We're going to run off of your battery, and I think you're going to see Kemba Walker have an enormous year.
I'm going to say this. If Kemba Walker can get the burst back that made him an all-star, and you can combine he and Derrick Rose at the point guard position, then I think their ceiling may be a little bit higher. But we've also seen Kemba Walker when he's been unavailable, and that's frustrating for the guys around him. We've seen him in pick-and-roll action, which is his best play coming off that high screen at the top of the key, gets into it, can shoot it at a great percentage because he's put in all those work. He gets swallowed up in the playoffs because there's no burst there. If he can get back and healthy, I love what he can do to elevate the Knicks.
The glue guy looked like he ate a lemon or a grapefruit there, and he made a sourpuss face when Doris started to back up Tim Legler about Kemba Walker, who you remember was on his Celtics at one, yeah, time. Please, please tell me what that face was about and what you were thinking.
Only because of his injury history.
I said
I don't know if he can carry the Knicks, like Tim Legler just said.
If he's healthy, if they manage his minutes, what's that word? Two words, load management.
Mm-hmm.
You got Derrick Rose as a backup. You got Quickley who can play the point here or there. Very interesting to see how this plays out.
He finally has some depth with this team.
If they can string him along throughout the season, man, he could be the guy. Think about the help that Julius Randle has now. Anyways, you got 30 seconds. We got to take a break. I know the clock manager is going to be on me in a second.
Yeah, yeah. He's a Celtics fan. Who cares what he says?
He doesn't want to hear about the Knicks anymore.
Well, look, the Knicks have not had a true, you know, number one point guard in years. And it got better last year with, you know, Derrick Rose coming into the fold. Emmanuel Quickley did emerge as an option in the point guard position. But they haven't had a true star point guard in years. And this could provide some stability for the lineup. I agree. I mean, I think the obvious answer is Julius Randle if he can keep up the production. But I've got no problem with them saying, you know, that Kemba Walker's the key for this team. Because, really, if he's healthy, man, he makes this team so much better.
Unbelievable difference maker if he is. I concur. Mario Sacco, News Channel 9, is next on Exit 31. It's ESPN Radio. We're at QSportsTalk.com. Listen, he's gonna air a little dirty laundry.
Ooh.
He's gonna spill the beans.
Oh boy!
There was a text between him and Mark Larson because there's a golf match, an Exit 31 Open golf match tomorrow. We're gonna start there. We'll talk some Q's football and a few other things with him next.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
I don't know how much longer the weather is going to hold out. But I have a feeling as long as it does every week or so, going to get a couple of more Exit 31 golf matches. Golf opens between our guest at 3:15 on Sportscaster Wednesday, Mark Larson, and the man who's on the phone right now on the Accelerate Sports Complex phone line, Mario Sacco with News Channel 9. And of course, pretty regularly a guest host with our friends on Orange Nation. But Mario, you told me that you got a text and there are some fresh rules that have been established for tomorrow. And you've got to spill the beans.
Mark laid down some new stipulations, actually in my favor, believe it or not. When Mark tends to play bad, he's got a little bit of Happy Gilmore in him, as far as maybe some club tosses and other choice things. So he said if he does that tomorrow that I get to add strokes to his score. So.
Wow.
So he's relying on you to keep him in check almost.
I guess so. Like, but is he gonna like use that against me if I beat him by like he wants to play match play tomorrow, which is fine with me. You know, we'll go Ryder Cup style. But yeah. So those are the new stipulations. Maybe you won't be as hot headed. We are playing Pompey, I do believe, tomorrow. So I've never played there.
It's a beautiful course. I've played there many times. I'll give you that. You're gonna love it. Incredible views. He was very salty for a while last week. When did he finally start to get over it? Did he carry that on for 48 hours, 72 hours afterwards?
He was better by probably about Friday, I would say. it took him a little while. He wouldn't answer back text messages. I give Mark the 48-hour rule after golf if he loses, so that's the new norm.
That's funny.
You know, I thought that Mark's rule changes were going to be something that would like really benefit him. Like I thought
making me have to hit a driver. Like I thought that's what he was going to throw in the bag.
I thought he was going to do something that benefited him. So I'm actually pretty surprised by the fact that he's almost putting himself in a hole here.
Yeah. Remember what we learned last time we talked about the golf match between you guys? Hit the 3-wood off the tee.
I'm just leaving it at home. The driver.
You're 2 for your last 2 against him, right?
I'm riding a 3-game winning streak.
Wow.
Against him, so.
Can you transfer that to Syracuse football, maybe, instead of a 3-game losing streak?
On the opposite side, yeah, switching gears.
He's about to symbolically represent the Syracuse football team. That's crazy. Listen, I want to stay with Syracuse, but I want to talk basketball, and I want to move it to a former player who's wearing the purple and gold last night. The Lakers were not a well-oiled machine. Even though Anthony Davis and LeBron each dropped over 30, Russell Westbrook struggled, let's put it that way, and they've still got some things to figure out. But, man, it was kind of cool but surreal and weird to see Melo in those colors on that floor on that team.
It was about, 10 years too late to get those guys together. You talk about Westbrook. He's kind of lost in the position where he's at because LeBron is pretty much their point guard. bringing the ball up the floor and stuff. And Westbrook doesn't know how to play off the ball. I mean, he's used to a guy that has the ball in his hands. Now, what they talked on in the morning, what Doris Burke was on, you guys, this morning, and she said, could you imagine if Westbrook agreed to go to the second unit and it would be him and Melo out there on the second unit, and then you have LeBron and Anthony Davis on that first unit? That would make more sense than what they're trying to do now, forcing him, you know, to kind of play off ball and, you know, not have the ball in his hands.
Yeah, and I feel like it's something where the ego is involved. That's one of the problems with having a bunch of these stars on the team, because the ego is involved wouldn't let you make the smart play. It would make you trying to make these guys happy. So
there's so many different things, Spencer, of when LeBron, it was LeBron and AD's team last year. You know, so many things ran through kind of AD.
Yeah,
and now how do you change that? I think Melo's. He knows his role. He knew his role in Portland. He knows, you know, his role with the Lakers of being a spot-up shooter. Defensively, though, teams are going to go after him. You might not see him in the game late because teams are going after him, especially Golden State last night.
They exploited it.
Yeah.
Actually, at different points, you could see they had exploited some of the defensive weaknesses and the fact that this is not a cohesive unit at all. There's a lot of fresh faces. It's an older team. I don't think that Russell is at that point that Melo is, where he can accept that role, and the ego is what's preventing it, because he can still get some solid minutes. Listen, you've got to manage LeBron at this point in time, and you have to kind of be careful with AD. He only played like 36 games last year.
Yeah.
It's interesting because on paper, you look at it, and they could win it all, and you know what? There's a lot of basketball IQ on that team. I mean, it's crazy. Rondo alone is a coach on the floor at this point, and they'll figure it out, I think. They're going to win some games. I mean, they're going to make some noise, but who knows if they can hold out for the rest of the year. It's Mario Sacco with us on Exit 31 on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Staying with basketball real quick, Jerry West Award, Buddy Boeheim up for it, top shooting guard in the country. Your thoughts?
I mean, look at all the accolades that he's bringing in already. Buddy's, I think, going to have a great year, and there's no other kid deserving of it. You know, what he put in from seeing him when I started here, what, 6 years ago now it's been? Seems like Buddy's been at Syracuse for about 6 years now lately, but when I started up here and what he was doing at JD, and people kind of were like, oh, well, you know, he's never gonna be that college type of player. Well, you know, he's put in the work. He's in the gym at 6 a.m. working out. Eric Diemendorf has done a good job of working with him, and the kid can flat out play, and he's hopefully has an NBA career in him as well, but hopefully it's a great year this year, and they're going to need to rely on him. I think early on they're going to need to rely on him because, you know, you don't know what you're going to get out of the other guys yet. You know, Benny Williams, you know, he has a bright future ahead of him being a star freshman. But until these guys come together and play 6 or 7 games, and we talked about that schedule, guys, off the top, minus, you know, the opener and a couple of other games, it gets pretty brutal at the end of November into December. So, what can we do early on? And I think Buddy's going to have to carry him.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Well, on the flip side of things, the football team trending in the wrong direction right now. Just want to get your thoughts, Mario, on, you know, this game, another 3-point loss, the third straight. Did, in your mind, did Clemson more win this game, or did Syracuse really lose this game based on the missed opportunities and the decision-making of the coaching staff?
I wouldn't say Syracuse lost. I mean, you have a former Luke Rosa Award kicker in Andre Schmidt. You expect to hit, you know, a 40-plus field goal. When we did Orange Nation, our show on Monday, I looked at the statistics, and he's 7 of 11 this year, but just 1 of 4 from 40-plus yards. And you can blame the hold, you know, the laces were pointed at him, as Ace Ventura once said, you know, laces out, Dan.
was a problem.
You know, that's a huge problem. I you have Clemson on the ropes, you're driving, and should you probably go for it with the best running back in the nation? 9 times out of 10, I would say go for it, but you got a great kicker as well. Kick a field goal and see what your defense can do to hold Clemson, because Clemson wasn't moving the ball. They had, what, one drive that they, I mean, the touchdown catch that the guy that got him in the end zone was phenomenal, or that would have been a field goal. So, you know, playing for overtime, I don't think was such a bad idea.
So what's the secret to going down to Blacksburg in the Commonwealth of Virginia to Lane Stadium, where Dino Babers has never been, and getting yourself a win in a very hostile environment? I mean, its reputation speaks for itself. As simple as shutting down Braxton Burmeister, or is there more to it?
First off, can you believe those guys haven't played for 18 years down there?
It's crazy, right?
That is mind-boggling. And they always talk about the ACC schedule and how things need to change. Like, that's ridiculous to me that, you know, a former Big East team that you used to face all the time, you're not playing anymore pretty much down there. But, yes, it is a hostile environment, but you're not going to get the hostile environment if it was a 7:30 night game at Lane Stadium and, you know, Enter Sandman's rocking the crowd. This is a team in Virginia Tech that's lost a couple now in a row. Pitt smacked them around pretty good in the first half and then, you know, kind of just toyed with them in the second half. But I think Pitt's actually a very good football team. What the key is going to be is, can Sean Tucker continue to churn out yards against Virginia Tech? You know, rely on him. Can that passing game get a little better? You've seen these wide receivers kind of step up a little bit. You know, you saw Pena last week bust a 62-yarder. But the drops have to go away, guys. You know, looking back at that game film, you know, yeah, Schrader isn't putting it directly on the money, but, you know, these are in receivers' hands that they got to be caught. They had about five or six drops last week, and I think the defense is going to be fine. I'm not worried about Virginia Tech's offense one bit. You know, they're averaging right around 20 points a game, so I think SU's defense is going to be fine. It's just a matter of, can Syracuse score, you know, 24 points to win a football game?
Is the team that was ranked 15th at one point earlier this season the one that's going to show up, or is it more what we've seen over the last couple of games? It's the last thing I'll ask you, Mario.
I think it's more of what we've seen over the last couple of games. You know, maybe that rating was inflated a little bit by what they did in week one. You know, winning at home, winning their first game. But, yeah, I think it's more the later with Virginia Tech.
All right, well, you keep Mark Larson in check. We'll ask about it next Wednesday. He'll have a chance to calm down by then. We will fire him up a little bit when we talk to him at 3:15.
Yeah. Rile him up a little bit. Maybe I'll let everyone know what happens on Friday. I am actually filling in for the great Paulie, so you'll hear my lovely pipes with Steve on Friday.
Yeah. Okay, then. Yeah, we got to dig that out in full on Friday, then. That's for sure. Thanks to Mario Sacco, News Channel 9, and Tech 31, ESPN Radio, and QSportsTalk.com. Let's get to Soundcheck next.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Listen to this. Mic check. Okay? Good. Here's your sports sound check.
Spencer Schwabe. Saying things like your traditional average word I won't say on the air. I want to call them mass bleeps. I want to say it so bad, but I just can't.
Did you see that Sox game last night,
that
dude?
That was unbelievable. I mean, up until Les Diaz screwed us over, we were going to win that game and go to the World Series again, and we could rub it in the Yankees fans' faces, but it's not happening now.
Yeah, because no matter what we do, we're always focused on the Yankees. I don't know why. I just sounded more like a Chicagoan. Chicagoan.
Yeah, we can't. Dabber. Yeah.
Dabber. Yeah,
yeah, where do we go? We went to Illinois.
I don't know. I'm not really sure.
What the hell happened there?
Dude. Did you see the Red Sox fans started chanting Yankees suck? even though they're not playing the Yankees, dude.
Isn't that the best part of sports, stuff like that? It really is.
To me, it's pathetic when the Red Sox fans are chanting Yankees suck when the Yankees have nothing to do with it. Like, stop focusing on us.
Well,
stop focusing on us. I don't care about the Red Sox. When the Yankees are not playing the Red Sox at Yankee Stadium, I couldn't care less about the Red Sox.
Spencer, they're still playing in the postseason, and we're discussing Aaron Boone.
So then why are they talking about the Yankees then? Why are they focused on the Yankees still? They can't get the Yankees out of their head. I don't focus on the Reds. I couldn't care less about the Red Sox.
The fan bases live rent-free inside each other's heads, don't they?
Not me, man. I'm telling you. If the Yankees win the World Series, you think I'm thinking about the Red Sox? You think I'm thinking about like a couple years ago in 2018 when the Red Sox won the World Series and Alex Cora at their championship parade is talking about how they beat the Yankees in the ALDS.
There is still always that little brother mentality.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, who cares?
You
won the World Series. Talk about that.
You weren't supposed to go off until you're killing me, Smalls, dude. What's the problem? You all right? Take a breath.
Sorry.
You got a big jug of water. Take a sip there.
Boston came up. I actually got to fill this up. Boston came up and you know, it just brings up a lot of deep-seated anger. I'm sorry.
Yeah, man. Wow, you're cranked up today. X31 ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. All right, let's talk about Boney real quick. You know, I had some things to say about Boney. I was a little bit frustrated, but now I've just accepted it. Because I'm not really surprised. Rationally, when I think about it, I'm not surprised they brought him back. All right, wait. We'll get back to Boney. I got audio here for soundcheck.
Okay.
What are you giggling about?
I'm just laughing about how I went from zero.
You lost it.
Yeah, I don't even know what happened. I blacked out.
You did.
I just saw Red Sox.
Usually we're talking about the Jets when you lose it like that. All right, let's talk about the Yankees real quick because this is part of our offseason of not playing in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Aaron Boone was on KJM a little bit earlier today. And they asked, first of all, when he knew that he would be back. And I did everybody the favor of cutting about 10 seconds of his ums and ahs and your nose out of this. I couldn't get them all,
yeah,
but I did the best I could.
I didn't feel like I was in limbo. You know, I knew towards the end of the season, you know, in my conversations with Brian Cashman that he certainly wanted me back. And I knew I wanted to be back. But there were things that, you know, organizationally you got to go through. And I had a really good conversation with Hal Steinbrenner last Monday, and then where he informed me that they did want me back, and I felt like I heard what I wanted to hear in that conversation that allowed, you know, my agent and Brian to then kind of work out a deal. So I don't think I ever felt in limbo. I never felt like it was a certainty that I was coming back, but was optimistic that we would be able to work something out.
Hey, Aaron, it's Brian. Do you want to be the manager still of the Yankees? Yes, I do. Thank you. That was the extent of the conversation.
Okay, 3 years with an option for four.
There was nothing more to it other than being in the unemployment line as soon as the job was offered for him to maintain being the manager of the Yankees and on the bench, not wearing a uniform top, wearing a sweatshirt with the sleeves cut off traditionally. He said yes. They have to get better. Roster wise, they have to apply analytics better. That's the way they're going with this. Mm-hmm. They're going to crunch the numbers, but they've got to bring in some different players and crunch their numbers and then use them the right way. And they addressed that. The difference is, are they going to be able to do that? The second part of this is, are they going to spend money like the Yankees traditionally do again? What do you think before I play another piece of audio from Boone?
No, I think something's got to change. I think, you know, you have been trying to limit, you know, yourself under the luxury tax. And, you know, you've been trying to keep the payroll, you know, obviously not down because they still have one of the highest payrolls in the league. But you've been trying to limit the payroll. And I think that that hasn't been working. I think, you know, if you're the Yankees this year, you've got to go all out and do whatever you can to get to bring the best talent in here and guys who are going to perform in order to be able to try to get over the hump. And I think that was an issue. That was a point of contention between Hal Steinbrenner and Brian Cashman, is just the unwillingness to really go all in. And I think that, you know, you're going to see the tone change, and Steinbrenner's going to open the wallet a little bit more this winter.
Well, if he does, maybe that can help get the Yankees over the top. This is what Aaron Boone said yesterday when they announced he was being brought back as the manager. Yeah, what do the Yankees need to do to get over the top?
We're always searching for a more perfect team or a better team, or it's hard to get it all. I mean, in a perfect world, you'd have this team that, you know, has a high contact rate, that hits the ball out of the ballpark, that gets on base, that's athletic, that plays great defense, that pitches. Like, so you're always working towards that. You know, it's hard to get that perfect team. So, you know, I think on the offensive side, people obviously talk about, you know, our power and our strikeouts, but, you know, this year was an up and down struggle for us offensively. And I would say the biggest thing that hurt us was especially because we're not a very fast team either, is we put the ball on the ground a lot, and the double play ball was something that really hurt us. You know, I think more so than just people talk about the strikeout. It was us putting the ball on the ground and really ending a lot of rallies with double play balls, and that really hurt us this year. You know, something that hopefully we can improve on next year.
They're lacking up the middle.
Yeah.
From catcher to center field. They need another starting pitcher. They need a definitive shortstop. They need an improvement from Gary Sanchez as your starting catcher. And they need a center fielder, because I don't want Aaron Hicks as my starting center fielder. You cannot depend on him. He's like an Ellsbury range in how much time he misses.
I think they actually, I think I saw a tweet during the season that actually Ellsbury played in more Yankee games in his career with the Yankees than Hicks has. Ellsbury was there for 4 years. Hicks has been here for six, I think. And Ellsbury has actually played more games as a Yankee than Aaron Hicks.
You're slightly injury prone, Aaron Hicks. Just putting that out there.
Just a bit.
That's not an opinion. That might be a fact. This is Soundcheck, Exit 31, ESPN Radio, and QSportsTalk.com. All right, let's switch to a different sport, if you don't mind. Do you want to talk about Kyrie and Embiid? I'm going to give you the option of the next piece of audio. We could go with that. I could go with some Dino Babers. I could go with the Warriors and Lakers that we were talking about a little bit earlier. I mean, what say you? You want to hear from Adam Silver talking about Kyrie?
Yeah, let's go Kyrie and maybe a little Embiid action.
So you want
Adam Silver.
You want to start with that one?
Let's go with Silver. I want to hear what the commish had to say.
All right, react to this.
Adam, let's talk. Look, your league is at 96% vaccination rate among your players. But there's so much talk about one of the guys who hasn't done it, Kyrie Irving. And so now, and you have said, look, this is not an NBA against Kyrie or versus Kyrie thing. This is a New York City law or regulation. And how it pertains to Kyrie. Yet it is an issue that impacts the product that's put on the floor. If you could sit down with Kyrie Irving, what would you tell him?
I'd tell him to get vaccinated first and foremost for himself and his family, next for his teammates and his community, and also for the league that I know he cares so much about. I understand, you know, that it's not just Kyrie. There are people in this country who disagree with the notion of getting vaccinated. But at least from everything that I understand, science is firmly on the side of getting vaccinated.
The league's 96% vaccinated.
Yep.
He's really the outlier on his team. But he's kind of getting a pass, whereas Ben Simmons is, everybody's going, me player, me player, me player. Isn't Kyrie being one also?
Kyrie's just as bad as Simmons, if not worse.
Yeah.
I mean, this goes beyond just acting like a baby in terms of, you know, the basketball personnel. I mean, this is a selfish move outside of sports. This is a selfish move just as a member of the community. And that goes beyond basketball. So, yeah, Kyrie Irving is worse than Ben Simmons. You know, Ben Simmons can act like a child and that's staying within the scope of basketball. Kyrie's issues goes out of the scope of basketball and into the community at large. And so it's way worse.
I think I made my feelings known that I think that they're both me players. They're going to be problems for this team. I don't know how you can sustain having either one of them be part of your team under these current circumstances.
No.
Simmons has got to go, and Kyrie's got to get vaccinated and get back in there and get with his teammates. Because the longer it goes on, they're going to start to resent the fact that he's not there when
Correct.
He's supposed to be there. One last piece of audio real quick on Soundcheck, Exit 31, ESPN Radio. This has to do with tomorrow night's game. And I'm looking at Cleveland and Thursday Night Football and Baker Mayfield. I mean, you got Case Keenum's going to take over now. He's got a torn labrum. So it looked promising for the Browns, and it no longer does. And OBJ is a problem. It just doesn't yep. work with Baker and OBJ. But here's Jeremy Fowler talking about Baker's injury.
This is a big deal because this is a serious injury.
Like, yeah.
He's going to need surgery, most likely. Depends on now or after the season. But he's going to be playing through some pain. It's affecting his mechanics, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm told that this is probably going to be a game-time decision. I know he hopes to play. He's trying to gut this out. But they're going to kind of see how he feels over the next 36 hours. Crucial time for the Browns that have Super Bowl aspirations. Can't fall to 3-4, but they got both tackles are out. Both running backs are out. Like,
receivers.
Defense is beat up. I mean, it's a bit of a mess. So he's trying to gut it out for his team in what is kind of a de facto contract year for him. I mean, this is a hot story.
Look ahead to the colder weather and accumulation of hits. Sorry, Cleveland. I guess your expectations should be what they always are to not have a chance to win a Super Bowl. It's not going to happen real quick.
No, it's not. And this Browns team, even when they were all healthy, weren't getting it done. I mean, they were a disappointment from what people were saying before the season. Once they got OBJ a couple years ago, they were saying, oh they now elevated themselves to Super Bowl caliber, to Super Bowl contenders. They didn't come close to that. And now with all these injuries, no. They're not even close.
Defense good.
Not even a playoff team right now.
Couple good running backs.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, you still got to have a quarterback.
Yeah.
You still got to have a quarterback. Action 31 ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. Quick break. We got to get in this chat. You're Killing Me Smalls is next. Spencer, you can finally let it out. Hang on.
You're Killing Me Smalls. This is Exit 31. Here is Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
You're Killing Me Smalls.
Yeah. So this is today's that You're Killing Me Smalls is something that, you know, watching, I felt for a couple years, but then watching the overtime between the Rangers and the Toronto Maple Leafs the other day and how good that was, how exciting that was. And with the 3-on-3 overtime, more often than not, you're getting goals scored in the extra frame so you don't have to go to the shootout. But, man, you've got to implement continuous 3-on-3 overtime until somebody scores to win it and get rid of the shootout.
You see the skill of the players, Spencer. It's, I mean, I totally know what you mean.
They should only
have the shootout in the All-Star game as a skills competition. And, I mean, I love a penalty shot in the game. But yeah, you're totally right. I mean, what's the point of doing that?
It's just, you know, and it doesn't feel as satisfying in a shootout when you win or lose in a shootout rather than when you're actually playing the game. And it's just so exciting. Like, why wouldn't you want to keep it going with a 3-on-3 until somebody scores? Because it's 3-on-3. Somebody's going to score. You're not going to have five overtime periods until somebody scores. I mean, it's just not going to happen because there's more space on the ice. You know, offense is more likely to occur.
They do. So it's a 5-minute overtime, and then they go to the shootout.
Yeah, 5-minute 3-on-3, then they go to a shootout.
So should you just go to the 3-on-3 full overtime, say 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Or just play it out until somebody wins?
Yeah, either that or just play it out till somebody wins. I mean, I just think that it's too exciting not for it to end that way.
QSportsTalk.com, new poll for You're Killing Me Smalls. 3-on-3, or do you go to the shootout?
I mean, a shootout was great when it was either that or the game ends in a tie. So when shootout was first implemented, it's exciting. You get to see kind of a different thing happen. But I just think it's time now. I mean, this 3-on-3, I mean, you saw hockey at its best. Just back and forth, nonstop. Goaltenders making unbelievable saves. The action was incredible. The passing was great. There was a lot of space on the ice. It was fast-paced. I mean, it was just hockey at its finest, and I just think that the product is so much better if you just allow the game to be decided in that fashion.
Are there any other changes to the game and the way it's run right now by the NHL, and now that it's back on TNT and ESPN and you're getting casual fans involved, you're probably bringing new sets of eyes that are checking it out for the first time? What do they need to do to make it more exciting?
First of all, the marketing that the NHL has had has not been has not been great. They don't market the sport very well. And so having it now on ESPN and having more eyes on it and the personalities that they got for the panels to talk about, I mean, getting Wayne Gretzky on TNT is huge. Just personalities like that. Like, you have to showcase the personalities within the sport. The NFL, the NBA does a great job with that. You see all the former NFL and NBA players on the ESPN shows, you know, discussing the sport. And it becomes like their personalities within themselves, where they have a big Twitter following and stuff. So people want to watch them as much as they want to watch the sport. I mean, people tune into NBA on TNT because Shaq and Charles Barkley and because of how entertaining they are.
Did you see the Barkley sucks chant last night?
That was amazing.
By the way,
Shaq getting that going, that was unbelievable.
The entire crowd was doing that.
That was unbelievable. But that's my point.
You didn't mention.
You got stuff like that in the NBA. And the NHL has just felt so stuffy for so long. Like, it's boring, business-like. The game itself is nothing like that. So you need to bring some excitement, some life into the sport.
You didn't mention baseball as a sport that markets their athletes well either. Hold on.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I got that out of the way for you. Finish up your thought.
The MLB isn't great at it. They're better at it. You know, you get players like Fernando Tatis, and they become a little bit more, prevalent beyond the sport.
More of that?
Yeah, you need more of that. You need to market your personalities, your talent. I mean, you got a guy like Connor McDavid who is so skilled at hockey. Like, he needs to become bigger than the game of hockey.
He plays
needs to
in be Edmonton. A personality. But he plays in Edmonton.
Yeah, okay.
That's the problem.
Yeah, but he is an exciting player.
He needs to play for the New York Rangers. That's all I'm saying.
That is very true. But you have personalities, and if you're a hardcore hockey fan, you know that.
Does it bother you that Connor McDavid's not on the New York Rangers?
It does bother me that Connor McDavid's not on the New York. I was watching his highlights.
You're wasting him.
I was watching Connor McDavid highlights last night, and I was like, man, it must be so nice to be an Oilers fan and watch this guy every day.
You really want him there, huh?
Why not?
Did you see the smile on his face?
Why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't you want Connor McDavid on your team? He's the best player in the world.
Yeah.
All of a sudden he goes from a negative Dante to
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
It's not a possibility. I'm not saying it's a possibility. I'm just saying it's a nice thought.
Yeah, I really want Connor McDavid on the Rangers.
Can you imagine Connor McDavid and Artemi Panarin?
Yes, I can.
Oh my God.
Let's get to the kerfuffle next. It's Exit 31, QSportsTalk.com. We're on ESPN Radio. A little more Ben Simmons, unfortunately. And then a few other things.
Who's got Twitter beef? Bulletin board material. We've got another Donnybrook, an athletic brouhaha. Let's go toe-to-toe. It's the Exit 31 Kerfuffle.
A classic conundrum.
This is Exit 31. Here is Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
Spencer, keep him or dump him. Yankees, Anthony Rizzo.
Keep him.
The Kraken, Gary Sanchez. Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Not if you can find a better option.
Yeah. Well, it depends. I mean, I'm going to say keep him only because I don't know I don't see another option right now.
Will they spend money this year?
Yes.
In free agency?
Yes.
They're going to spend a lot of money?
Yes.
They're going to make some serious improvements? Mm-hmm. Luxury tax threshold met or stayed below. So now let's go.
Let's go.
That's it?
Yep.
Let's bleep and go.
All engines go. They need to. I mean, what they're trying to do here is not working. They need to bring in the big guns. You need guys who are going to perform. You need the talent. I mean, you need a shortstop at the very least.
Going to get one?
Yeah.
They're going to get Correa?
Yep. Absolutely.
Correa is the target. Is he the number one priority and target for this team?
You can
yes or no me, and we can move on.
Yes.
I would say he has to be.
Yeah,
I think that they'll get over the other nonsense. They got over with Gerrit Cole.
Yeah,
he was an Astro as well. They were fine with it. Mm-hmm. All right, let's kerfuffle. Let's get it underway here. Got Christian Winfield talking about Kyrie Irving. Which situation is worse? Is it Ben Simmons or is it Kyrie? Well, let's let him answer and then we'll kerfuffle.
Everybody wants to see him back on the floor. If you get Ben Simmons back on the floor, that Sixers team can really do some damage. And now it's just he's doing damage to them. He's doing damage to himself. I'm sure the perception of him league-wide has changed. Versus, you know, Kyrie, what he's doing is more so, you know, it's a personal belief, right? And you can't fault a man for that. No matter where you stand on it, you can fault someone like Ben Simmons, who, in my opinion, is just going about this whole trade thing entirely the wrong way. So I would say the situation in Philly is a little bit worse than what's going on in Brooklyn right now.
Does Kyrie Irving get, it seems like, more of a pass overall than Ben Simmons simply because at the end of the day, he's a better player and he's proven that. You can say what you want, but he's got a ring. Ben Simmons, I'm not saying he cost them a ring, but he cost the 76ers a chance to move on last year. His resume's better. It just is ultimately, right? Well, and obviously he's played a few years longer, but he's a better player.
Well, yeah, Kyrie's a guy who has gotten it done on the court. And when you get it done on the court, you know, your antics, I suppose, off the court are forgiven a little bit. I mean, look at a guy like Dennis Rodman. You know, I mean, he because of the fact that he got it done on the court, you know, you accept all the extra that comes with a player like that. So I think, yeah, Kyrie does get a little bit of a pass because of that. Because Simmons, it's like, you know, what have you done? What have you done to act like this? Now, the only problem is with Kyrie, you know, you sit there and you say, oh, it's just a guy going with, you know, it's a personal choice. You can't fault him for that. Wrong. Because I really wish I believed that Kyrie Irving was genuine in what he's saying about his stance.
I don't think he is either.
I don't think he is.
He did Instagram Live the other day. I don't know if you saw any of that, but it was kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
Like the message isn't uniform. You can't draw a straight line from point A to point B to point C to point D.
Yeah.
It was like he went here, then he went there, then he backtracked, then he went. It was odd. It was bizarre.
It doesn't seem like he has his own facts straight. Like he's just doing this for attention. To me, again, I don't know. I don't know Kyrie Irving personally, of course, but I just, to me, the way that he has been in the past, I just don't believe this is a genuine, he really is taking a stand for something he believes in, or it's he just wants to appear to be taking a stand for something he believes in.
You know, let's jump into QSportsTalk.com chat for a second. Not something I intended to ask you about in our kerfuffle, in other words, who's battling back and forth in the world of sports, but it's interesting to me. Do you think that Sean Tucker will get screwed out of the Heisman? Let's say his standard of play maintains for the rest of the year, regardless of what the win-loss record of Syracuse ends up being.
Mm-hmm.
And will that screw him out of winning the Heisman?
Yeah.
Do you think that there is a potential in that? I see a lot of conversation happening in the chat right now, kind of going back and forth on this. And we're getting, obviously, some Kyrie Ben Simmons in there. But let's focus on that on our next kerfuffle. I say yes. I mean, there was a ACC bias we heard about from Will Vandevort yesterday as it applies to your Boston Colleges and your Syracuses, your Northeast teams that are in the ACC, because doesn't it always seem to focus on Tobacco Row?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think there's something to that. Will Vandevort, who is a journalist right down there, said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was kind of happy to be on the Syracuse Airwaves where he could really spew that and not feel the brushback. But I think that Sean Tucker's ultimately going to get screwed out of this. When right now he's the best running back in the country, the numbers say he is. And you know what? To back it up, and I'm going to let you go, Eric McClain of the ACC Network said the same thing. I think he's the best running back in the country. He's good at everything it takes.
Yep.
So he maintains status quo. He should win it. But he won't.
No, he won't. You think they're going to let a guy from Syracuse win the Heisman? No. They want the big names. They want the big names who attract the more attention to win the Heisman. The guys who have been talked about simply because they play for Alabama or Georgia, you know, the guys that have been talked about since before the season started. You're not going to let a dark horse win the Heisman. And I'm not saying it's right. Sean Tucker absolutely deserves to be in the conversation, but it's not going to happen. Syracuse is a 3-4 team, and they're not going to give him the benefit of the doubt there. He's not going to be looked at. It's the same as you say the bias in pro sports with small market teams.
Well, Prince Odi in the chat says he's not even going to be invited to New York City. Agent Orange, what did he say? You want to see Tucker as a dark horse Heisman candidate and always make a bowl game? Hire Steve Adazio.
Interesting.
I thought we were going to get Ed Orgeron to come up ahead. He was a defensive line coach back in the 90s, and then things went off the rails a little bit, and I had to get his life back in order. But it's now toxic down there. Again, he's gone from a pariah to a pariah, and he was a national championship winning coach a couple of seasons
ago. 2 years, yeah.
It's crazy.
2 years ago.
Yeah, no, I think Sean Tucker is going to get screwed out of this award.
I do, too.
When it's all said and done. This is Exit 31. It's our kerfuffle on ESPN Radio and, of course, at QSportsTalk.com. Join us in the chat there. Next up, let's go back to let's go to football. Let's go Thursday Night Football. Broncos, Browns. So it's a commercial pitch man with a torn labrum versus Teddy Two Gloves. But Baker's not going to play. You're going to get Case Keenum. And now any chances that Cleveland had, as we said a few minutes ago, are off the table.
Yeah.
This is you have two great running backs. You have a good defense. You had the makings of a very good overall offense. Baker, everybody wants to exalt him as a better quarterback than he is, but he was enough based on their running game, the weapons that they had at receiver, in theory, but now that's completely off the table. I don't think Case Keenum is taking them anywhere, and now poor Cleveland. What a horrible fan base. The fan base is great.
Yeah.
It just sucks to be a member of their fan base.
Well, there's a reason why they showed up to games wearing paper bags on their head.
Yeah, well, I think it was an 0-16 record that had a little something to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, they have some winnable games the rest of the way. But, yeah, again, Case Keenum, I mean, that changes things. Like, having, that guy under center, you're not your QB1, that's tough to recover from. It's tough to recover from for any team. I mean, this is the Browns' schedule the next few weeks. You know, they got the Broncos, obviously, this week. They got the then they got the Steelers, the Bengals, the Patriots, the Lions, the Ravens again, 2 weeks in a row. Then the Raiders, Packers, Steelers again, and Bengals again.
I'll take one on the chin while you're clicking around.
Yeah.
Bring up the Giants' schedule.
All right.
Go ahead.
All right.
Take a look at this. This is a one-win team. Daniel Jones, of course, dealing with the concussion issues. Still going to be a problem. You've got to get past that.
Yep.
Other injuries. Andrew Thomas out at least three games now, who's been playing very well. He's definitely turned out to not be a bust. The offensive line, not good, but better than it had been. Just problem after problem, injury after injury. And now look who they got to play.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
They got a tough stretch here. They got Panthers. They got Chiefs, Raiders, Bucks, Eagles, Dolphins, Chargers, Cowboys, Eagles, Bears, and then football team.
They've got, in theory, some teams they should be.
Yeah.
But then you have to look at the team we're talking about, who is, over the last 5 years, yes, Giants fans, are you with me on this? The worst team in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, how many of those do they win?
This team's
Go ahead, Jets fan, rub it in my face.
This team's an anomaly. I mean, you would think, okay, so the Dolphins game is winnable. You can beat the Dolphins. I mean, that's a game where you'd be like you could surprise people. You know, people, because again, you didn't expect them to beat the Saints. You didn't expect the Giants to beat the Saints. They did. So they have these outlier games. So I feel like the Dolphins game is winnable for them. One of the games against the Eagles, maybe they take one of two against the Eagles.
They're going to win three games all year.
Maybe
they're going to win three games.
I mean, they're not beating the Chiefs. The Panthers, I don't think they're beating the Panthers, but the Panthers are struggling a little bit right now. It's a tough stretch. They're not beating the Raiders.
Almost better to be a Jets fan right now. Let's take a quick break. Mark Larson with Spectrum Sports going to join us next at Sportscaster Wednesday. We've got to get him to answer to the text that he sent Mario Sacco, and then much more next. Exit 31, ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
We're joined now on the phone lines by Mark Larson, the sports director at Spectrum Sports. And like the good sports journalist that he is, dropping some news on us in the break. You might have seen it on QSportsTalk.com if you're a subscriber. But Mark, just tell us what's going on with some of the news that broke today regarding sports in New York.
Yeah, well, NISFA, the High School Athletic Association organization that kind of runs the high school sports in the state of New York, has approved a ruling or some kind of measure where high school athletes now can make money off their name, image, and likeness, just like college kids can now, which is, I guess it's not surprising because there will be, a few high school athletes that could actually take advantage of this. But it's certainly not going to help most of them. But we were trying to think in the break of folks around here like Greg Paulus way back in the day, maybe Daywon Coleman, Andy Routens when they were on their way to Syracuse University. Some people like that could actually make money off their autograph. I could just see a kid who's kind of maybe, I don't know, backup running back sitting outside the football stadium with a table saying autographs, 50 cents. Who knows? Maybe you could pick up some pocket change. I don't know.
Yeah, it immediately made me think about like LeBron James when he was a junior in high school at St. Mary's in Akron. And I mean, he could have cashed in on that.
Absolutely.
Sure. They're few and far between.
What are they going to come out with, an EA Sports High School Football 2022 now or something like that? They're going to come out with some high school video games?
There are some. I mean, JJ Starling could probably make a lot of money. These prep school kids, possibly, but in the state of New York, or in central New York anyway, there's nobody I can think of at the moment, but I'm going to go talk to Buddy Wilkinski at CBA. He's been around quite a while, so if anybody's around, he'll know.
Well, even within the college ranks, though, there's inequity. Jim Boeheim talked about that at ACC Media Day just a week or so ago. And he's absolutely right. There's a big difference. There's going to be a big difference on college teams.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a challenge for Syracuse, but look at all the Power Five conferences and the blue bloods across the country. I mean, there's a big discrepancy there, and there's going to be jealousy, and the problem's going to get worse. That's basically what Jim said. And you're going to definitely see that with high school kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're 18 coming in, and there's a maturing a maturing that happens over the course of college, one would hope, from year one to, say, year four or five or however long you're at the school. So this is going to get interesting. We're talking to Mark Larson with Spectrum Sports here on Exit 31. It's ESPN Radio. We're at QSportsTalk.com. So we'll get to food in a second. We've got to start with Aaron Rodgers saying he owned the Bears. We talked about that during the break. And I wanted to know if he also owns your mom's heart.
Of course he does. Yep, I think that's forever. And kind of like you said, the Bears fan. I love it. I mean, you know, I think he's kind of been accused in the past of being a little too, you know, not as emotional as people would like. They want him to be more fired up. They want him to be more animated. Well, he's certainly doing that in his later years. And boy, he had just a terrible first half, but put together a great second half, and I loved it because he happens to be my my fantasy backup quarterback. Russell Wilson was out, so A-Rodge was in, and he really came through. So appreciate what he did.
I want to chest pass over to Spencer because I am just as curious as to what his answer. You know what? I don't want to step on your toes. I think I know what you're going to ask, but it might not have been. So I'll let you go first.
Well, I was going to ask about the food because now you guys are going to think about food. Yeah,
I thought you were going. I thought you were going to go Chris Bunch.
No, I mean we could. Okay,
I was going to save the food at the end, but you want to get out of the way because Kevin's asking.
Why don't we go? Why don't we go with Chris Bunch, and then we'll talk about like a bunch of bananas or something like that. So we'll go with food. So there's my corny dad joke of the day. So I mean Chris Bunch making his decision tomorrow, or at least revealing his decision tomorrow. I mean, what are you feeling about Syracuse's chances? Obviously, it's 1-3 at this point, according to all reports. But what are you feeling? Is he coming to Syracuse?
Geez, you know, I think I've just stopped guessing on these things. I mean, J.J. Starling not coming here was, well, I don't think anybody saw that coming, especially him taking Notre Dame out of that five that he was down to.
Yeah.
They're 18-year-old kids. I mean, I don't even know what my own son's going to do from one day to the next, much less a kid I've never met before. So, you know, whether he picks Syracuse or not, guess what? Syracuse basketball is going to survive, and it's going to thrive, and Boeheim's going to get a different guy to put in there. You know, I think being at a school like Syracuse, covering a team like Syracuse, unless it's like a generational type talent, I mean, if it's just another guy who's a really good basketball player, he picks Syracuse, great. If he doesn't, okay, well, we'll get somebody else. You know what I mean? So I guess I don't hang on everything like this that happens. It comes along once in a while. It's great if he picks Syracuse. If it doesn't, you know, he's dead to me. You know, we don't cover him. So that's it.
If SU gets Bunch, this is a question from QSportsTalk.com. What happens with the Boeheim detractors? Do they have anything else left to say? They will, but do they at that point?
Yeah, you know, there will always be Boeheim detractors out there. And I don't know, from covering this guy for almost 20 years now, he just keeps going. And like I said, if he doesn't get Bunch, he'll get someone else, and then everybody will love him. And, you know, I don't think he hangs on all of these things either, because he knows he's been around long enough to know that there are wins and losses and on the court and in recruiting too. And he's gotten his share, that's for sure, and he'll continue to get his share as long as he's here.
Mark, answer for your golf text to Mario Sacco and the rules for tomorrow. He's got to keep you in check from what we're hearing.
Yeah, and I heard you guys are going to try to rile me up. Guess what? That's not going to work anymore, because I have decided that, you know, acting like a psycho on the golf course is just, it's not a good look. And especially, you know, my son is going to be coming with, I think, if he can get himself out of bed. And this is not something I want to pass along to him. You know, like I've passed along a lot of things to him willingly and unwillingly. And this is something that I'd like not to pass along. So he and I have a rule when we go play. We play match play. And the rule is, if you throw your club, you lost the hole. So, That's how it's going to go tomorrow. I talked to Mario about playing match play because, you know, then you have that blow-up hole, but you're not out of it. So hopefully it will learn with that. And, it does me no good. It doesn't improve my game, that's for sure, throwing those big tantrums on the course. So that's just – it has to stop. You know, I'm too old. If I end up dying on the golf course, I don't want it to be because I was throwing my club and I was upset. I want it to be because I got a one or, you know,
something like that. Fell off a cliff after hitting a great shot, something.
Well, you just have to encourage him to take the driver out of his bag, and I think that'll help you out. He played well with the three wood from what he told us. So it is Mark. It is Mark Larson with Spectrum Sports here once again on Exit 31 on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. So I want to get a quick question in about football real quick before we get to the food and we close out with that. So it's been a minute since this Big East rivalry has been renewed with Virginia Tech. We haven't been down there. Dino's never been there. It's a crazy environment. We asked Mario about this. Just a general observation as we head into this game on Saturday afternoon.
It's another place that I haven't been either, and I'd love to go. I've heard so much about it. I think it would be a little cooler if it was a night game. A 12:30 game is probably not going to be quite the environment we've seen on television. I think Syracuse is playing well. I heard you guys talking earlier about how they're trending downward. I guess I wouldn't see it that way. I mean, they're playing well. They should have beaten Wake Forest. They should have beaten Clemson. So they talk about, okay, we just have to correct a few things and finish. Well, it's easier said than done, and you worry about it kind of getting in their heads now if they're in a close game where they kind of almost expect to lose it. So hopefully if it's a close game, they can pull it out and then start to kind of get on a roll. I do think they're playing well. I think obviously Tucker is playing as well as anybody in the country, and that line is gaining confidence, and you know, the receivers need to gain a little confidence and help a guy out when he does make a good throw. And I like their chances. But, you know, I think Virginia Tech is struggling a little bit too. And Syracuse is, like I said, I don't think they're struggling. I think they're playing well. They're just not winning. So if they can get it together, get themselves a lead, and come back with a win, it could do wonders for their confidence. So hopefully they're catching Virginia Tech at the right time.
To be fair, when I said they were trending downwards, I simply meant in the fact that they lost three in a row. So I didn't necessarily mean in terms of their play. No, I just wanted to make sure, because you know I spent all day yesterday being wrong about everything. So I just want to make sure. I'm not carrying that over till today. But all right, without further ado, let's go with the most important question of the day. And Mark Larson, what's your food of the day? What do you got for us?
Okay, well, you know, again, I feel like I'm coming unprepared, and I feel bad about that. But I just had lunch. I got myself lunch at the Pickle, which is my favorite deli of all time. And I always, always, always get a cookie to go with. Well, today, and I've tried it before. I've gotten, like, cookie. When I'm with somebody, like, they'll get pudding, and I'll get cookie, and we'll kind of share. Today I went for the pudding, the chocolate pudding, underrated, in the little dish with the whipped cream on top, $3, but it's heaven. And it, you know, so if you're in the mood for the cookie, I got no problem with that. But if you want to kind of do something different, man, just take that whole pudding. Because you know what? I've always shared the pudding. I've never gotten to eat the whole thing myself, and it's so underrated, right? Chocolate pudding with whipped cream.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like... it's not like it's in my top five desserts of all time. Like I don't go after dinner at home. I don't think, God, I wish I had some pudding right now. But man, when it's there and it's chilled and it's ready to go, yeah, it's very underrated. So next time it's Pickle and you're thinking cookie, take a look at that cooler. Grab one of those puddings.
All right. Well, we've got feedback that the turkey burger that you created last week, minus the avocado, was really good. That's Mark Larson with Spectrum Sports.
Minus the avocado. I didn't say that. No. Nope.
Yep.
Minus. Gotta have the avocado.
They said minus the avocado. That's what I saw in the chat a few minutes ago. Mark Larson with Spectrum Sports with us every Wednesday about 3:15 on Sportscaster Wednesday on X31. It's ESPN Radio. We're at QSportsTalk.com. Papa Payne's in the chat, and Jacob Payne is going to join us next, and we are going to talk more SU versus Virginia Tech next.
This is Exit 31.
In about an hour, I'm going to f*** away $20,000.
What, are you going to bet on the Knicks? I'm sorry. I mean, how often? I mean, oh, man, nobody thinks that's funny?
Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
Mario Sacco has now tweeted a picture of Mark Larson eating said cookie.
Yeah, I got that notification.
Yeah, that's
Let's
right there.
Let's pull this up.
I've shared that. I'm at ESPN Rain. Give everybody yours.
S. Davidson, WKTV.
And Jay Payne says is on the phone with us and QSportsTalk.com. Welcome to ESPN Radio. Papa Payne is in there. He's expounding on the greatness of Sean Tucker. I don't care about that Robinson guy from Texas. We're in Orange Country. Jacob, listen, we got to roll the laces, man. I don't know any way to put this and open this up with you. How disappointing was it when Andre Schmidt missed that field goal? Over 40, he's 1 out of 4 on the season. It kind of broke your heart a little bit, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was in the building for that kick. That was the first game I've had the opportunity of watching from the stands with meat in the seats. And, you know, I was kind of around the 40-yard line. So when you're looking from the side, it's kind of hard to tell. It certainly didn't look good, but you're holding your breath. And you see those referees come out with their hands lowered saying it is no good. That was brutal. I mean, I was getting ready to question why we gave Clemson so much time on the clock to come back and break the tie, but didn't even get a chance to complain about that. So it was very, very deflating.
Do you pin the blame more on the coaching staff for making the decision to kick it, or do you put the blame more on the players for not executing at the end of the day?
Well, I mean, if you look at the replay of the kick and you see how the holder is holding the ball, I mean, it's kind of hard to expect a guy to nail a kick from almost 50 yards out when you got the laces facing out. So, yeah, execution was a problem. But like I was kind of hinting at earlier, it just seems like when you get into these late game situations, you know that you're likely to be in a spot where, okay, it's a fourth and short, I'm on the fringe, field goal range, what am I going to do? It seems like that Coach Babers is sort of making these decisions on the fly in the moment instead of being prepared. You know, calling timeout before third down and fourth down. I mean, you call those timeouts to give yourself enough time to run another play to kind of convert on fourth down. So it just seemed really strange when you call that timeout and then you're trying to make a decision on the fly. You're kind of putting your team sort of in a very urgent position, like, okay, we're kicking. And that's something that I feel like Andre Schmidt and the rest of the field goal team needed to know well in advance instead of in the moment. So, yeah, that is a tough spot to put your players in.
So I read a bunch of scouting reports about the Virginia Tech Hokies, okay? First of all, it's been a long time since Cuse has been there. It's notorious for being a very hostile environment for a visiting team. Upon that, I've also read, don't throw the ball anywhere near Jermaine Walker, score over 20 points, and the offense is make or break based on what Braxton Burmeister, their quarterback, does. Have you read the same? Anything that you want to add or subtract from that? Because I know you took a look at the Hokies, too.
No, yeah, I think I read the same article that you read there. Yeah, certainly Lane Stadium is a tough place to play. The Orange, historically, while they haven't been there lately, aren't very good. This is Coach Babers' first time to coach in that building. And, you know, it's very intimidating when you see the student section going off to enter Sandman. But Virginia Tech hasn't looked very good recently. They've lost 3 out of their last 4 games. They have 3 wins this year, but 2 of those coming against Richmond and Middle Tennessee, and they didn't look that great against those teams either. So this is a team that is down. They don't do anything particularly well on offense. Like you said, most of the offensive production runs through Braxton Burmeister. He is a dual-threat quarterback who leads that team in rushing. But he is nowhere close to being the same kind of dual threat as Malik Willis. Similar in that he's sort of a first read quarterback. And if you can take that first option away from him, you can rattle him. I think he's much better in the quarterback designed runs than he is scrambling. But if he does take off on his feet, I don't think it's enough to really
impact the game that much. Didn't do very well last week. I think he had a quarterback rating of 11. He was sacked three times. I think this is a very winnable game. And like you said, if you can shut him down, no real threat to run the ball otherwise. So, yeah, neutralize him and you have a great shot.
On the flip side of that, you know, how does the Syracuse offense stack up against the Virginia Tech defense? You know, Garrett Schrader couldn't really get anything going with the legs, you know, the last time out against Clemson. Does he have a bounce back game? What do you think they do? Do they put up points on the board? Because the Virginia Tech head coach, Justin Fuente, is 30-0 at Lane Stadium when opponents score less than 20 points. Can Syracuse get over that benchmark?
I think they can. And if you are trying to figure out what the Virginia Tech defense does well, they're above average in pass defense. So why throw the ball when you can run? They are allowing 197 yards. Their last three games against the run, 160 yards allowed to Richmond, 180 yards against the Fighting Irish, and 208 yards allowed against Pitt last week. Watching the game against Pitt last week, these guys, they quit. I mean, they were just getting manhandled and brutalized in the trenches. I think this is going to be Sean Tucker's best game. I think he easily eclipses the 1,000-yard mark this week. And I think he could go 200 yards in this game. I think Schrader could tack on an extra 100. I think you could see a 300-yard rushing output. And when you're running for that many yards, you're controlling the clock, you are demoralizing a defense, and I think you can get three-plus touchdowns between Sean Tucker and Garrett Schrader. I think they reach 20 points pretty easily. And, you know, after seeing three straight three-point losses, it's kind of hard to have faith in this team, but I think they are going to win this game, and I think they're going to win it pretty easily.
Jacob Payne along with us here on Exit 31 on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. You know, there are a lot of drops in the last game, but Garrett threw the ball around, I think it was nine different receivers we had discussed yesterday, caught a pass. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, do you just stick with the ground game? Because that's probably what's going to get you there. Or is this going to be a chance for them to throw the ball around a little bit and clean some of that up? Is it even necessary? Or you just kind of see, you just kind of game manage, I should say, maybe throw the ball 15 or 20 times and otherwise run a lot. Is that the way we go?
You know, I don't think it's going to be necessary. I think you're going to be able to get your yards and get your points on the ground.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly if you're in a spot where you're up double digits, yeah, you would like Schrader to get more comfortable. It's very interesting. It seems like he's better when Shiz is hitting the fan and he's on the run and he's trying to escape pressure and he has to pull a rabbit out of his hat. Watching that game last week, it was like the easy throws he kind of had a hard time. And like you said, receivers let him down more than a few times. But when he has heat and pressure in his face, that's when he pulled out some of his best throws. So one thing I would like to see, Tucker, who is second in the country in all-purpose yards, only caught two passes last week, wasn't really targeted, for some reason wasn't as big a factor in the passing game. If you want to pick up yards through the air, keep giving it to 34. I want to see him catching more passes out of the backfield and getting that yard after catch.
Yeah, Schrader's good at freelancing a little bit, and I think you're going to see a lot of TFLs, a lot of tackles for loss. I think that Syracuse defense is going to wreak havoc in the backfield. That's Jacob Payne, Papa Payne's checking things out in the QSportsTalk.com chat. We're Exit 31 on ESPN Radio. Right back with the last thing we'll say today. Thanks, Jacob.
This is Exit 31. Here is Rainstradamus and Nostradavidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Here's the last thing we'll say today.
It'll be in the social media feeds at ESPNUR and at ESPN Syracuse and at Exit 31 ESPN. That's where you'll find us on Twitter and Facebook or wherever you get your podcasts. That's right. You can always give it a listen or on demand at QSportsTalk.com. That includes Orange Nation, and Brent Axe will be on the block in just a couple minutes. We were talking about Derrick Henry a second ago. I'm sorry, Bills Mafia, but he was the reason with his three touchdowns and about 5,000 yards. You can't tackle the guy. He's a video game in human form. But we were wondering, can you tackle a guy based on how long his hair is? He's got long hair, and it is legal to use the hair. You can also be called for holding if you grab the hair. So there you go. It was clarified. That's J-Cab coming through with a quick Google and popping that in the QSportsTalk.com chat. I wasn't sure. I was like, I think it's illegal, but no, you can use it.
I thought it was legal, but, you know, and you guys made fun of me, you know, during the commercial break on QSportsTalk.com. You made fun of me a little bit for being a boomer because I said it should be an unwritten rule, though, that you just don't tackle a guy by the hair. I mean, how is that a boomer move? Like, That is such a little cop out move. I mean, I can't say it on the air, but I hate that. If you're gonna tackle somebody by the hair, I mean, come on.
But you can't horse collar though.
No. But I feel like it's like the same thing. You're tugging the back of the guy's head.
But it's clearly different if you got a guy with no hair or short hair. It's not gonna come into play. It almost seems like an advantage for the defense. You're helping the defense out if you grow your hair long.
Mm-hmm.
I'd cut it off just so it's not an option and something to grab onto. Because then if you get up in there and you get the back of the neck, that's a penalty. I mean, that is a penalty.
That's why Troy Polamalu played defense, so that he wouldn't have to worry about getting tackled by the hair.
You know what? And if somebody grabs him, then it's holding.
Yep.
So you can't grow it down to your waist, I suppose, if you're on defense, and cut it short if you're on offense. I think the clock manager is signaling me that it's time to turn things over to Brent. You're on the block at the top of the hour. It's Exit 31 ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. See you tomorrow, too.